Please welcome Tim Crowley.
Thank you. No politics, no politics. When I woke up on Inauguration Day, it was raining. It was raining, and I didn't want to read or listen to the news like I usually do. I needed a break from all that oinking and bleeding and tweeting. I needed to hear some silence. So I sat down at our window seat with a copy of The Land of Little Rain, a book of essays written over 100 years ago by Mary Austin, a book about the land and the sky and the plants, animals, and people in and around the Owens Valley. So when everything changed, I was listening to rain and thinking about the desert. And the Owens Valley is a desert, a 120-mile-long desert in eastern California. To the west, the Sierra Nevada mountains tower 10,000 feet above the valley floor, sucking the rain from those Pacific storms before it can fall on the valley floor or on the Inyo and White Mountains to the east. The Owens Valley is also the quickest and the coolest way to hitchhike to the Sierra from LA. You have to thumb through 200 miles of the Mojave Desert before you hit the south end of the valley near Owens Dry Lake. And I always knew I was getting close whenever I saw the Red Cone. The Red Cone is a hill. On the maps, it's called Red Hill. And I've always wondered about it whenever I rode or had a ride past that mountain, because I've always had this strange fascination with distant blue hills rising out of the desert. So one day in the early 80s, I had my ride drop me off and I checked it out, even though it was right next to the road and even though it wasn't blue. The slope was steep and the soil ground down cindery red stone that didn't support any plants, animals, or shade. When I got to the top, I could see the not so distant Southern Sierra to my north, and there was a couple of blue distant mountain ranges marching off towards the east, towards the Death Valley. And at the top of that little red hill, there was a shallow depression that I am pretty sure was a crater. So I decided I'd spend the night up there. I decided I would sleep in a crater. But there was still plenty of daylight left, so I skied down that cindery slope to an empty dirt road, because where that road branched off of the 395, there was this little sign with an arrow pointing towards Fossil Falls. And I had nothing to do and nothing but time, so I walked in the desert and I found this deserted desert campground with a couple of broken down picnic tables and a pump, a real pump that you had to crank up and down. So I took the last of my stale LA water, water that might have been flowing down the Owens River, and I poured it out into the desert. And I drank my fill and I refilled my canteens. And there was something gratifying and satisfying about having a labor to bring forth water from the desert. It felt almost biblical. Fossil Falls wasn't quite of this world. It was a frozen lava flow of smooth obsidian-type rock that had been smoothed and water-worn into these fantastic shapes. And I found tunnels and tubes and caves and lots of nooks and crannies. It was like walking around on the surface of a giant English muffin. And there wasn't anyone there. It was quiet. And as I wandered around that desert wilderness, I understood why Jesus and John the Baptist and the prophets went into the desert to meditate and pray. And I understood why they were so weird. And when the shadows started getting long, I went back to Red Hill and I spent the night in a crater. And the sun went down, and I watched that Red Hill shadow stretch out across the desert until the Sierra shadow consumed it and consumed me and the desert, and everything turned to night. And I never made it to the Sierra that trip, or even to the Owens Valley, because I thumbed a few more miles up the road to Owens Dry Lake, and I turned right and went to Death Valley instead. And it was beautiful and desolate and dangerous, but it wasn't deadly because it wasn't summer yet. It was still spring. I went down to Badwater, the lowest spot in this continent, and then I went up and spent a few days backpacking around the Panamint Mountains, the highest point in that park. And I was able to look down at Badwater and look up and see Mount Whitney in the distance. And I spent a night by myself at that weird dry lake where the rocks sail across the desert and leave their tracks in the sky, in the ground. And sometimes in the desert, it is quiet. You can't hear anything. You can't hear any wind or water or creatures or people. The only thing you can hear is time and silence. But I have never been able to hear that silence, not even in the desert, because I have this constant, unceasing, unwavering, high-pitched squeal that is always in my head. I have tinnitus. And I really shouldn't say I have never heard silence, because I haven't always had tinnitus, but I grew up right in front of the Hollywood Freeway and I had five sisters, so I can probably say I have never heard silence. And one of the causes of tinnitus could be long exposure to loud sounds. A lot of rock musicians have tinnitus, and I have been to a lot of concerts and a lot of clubs. I remember this one concert I went to with 30 or 40,000 of my best friends. I'm not quite sure who it was, so I probably had a good time. But it was somebody like Aerosmith or Black Sabbath. Ozzy Osbourne has tinnitus. And there was this one point during a guitar solo, the guitarist was walking his way up the scales, note by amplified note, and I could actually feel the sound physically assaulting my eardrums, and my tinnitus just cranked up, and if that guitarist would have gone one note higher, he might have killed us all. But I had tinnitus years before I ever started listening to rock and roll. It started one night when I was about 10 years old. I was lying in my bed listening to my folks listen to the Doris Day Show. And suddenly, I heard this pulsating in my head like a steam train starting up. It was low, but it started getting louder and faster. And then it started getting slower and lower again. And between the pulses, I could hear this steady, high-pitched tone. And then the train stopped, but that noise never has. I remember running down the hall and telling my folks, and I remember going to a different doctor for a few times and wearing headphones, but I don't remember what happened. But about 20 years later, my folks were up visiting us in Morro Bay, and I was talking to somebody, I don't know who, and I don't know how it came up, but I mentioned the ringing in my ears, and my mom, who wasn't even part of the conversation, whipped her head around, and she looked at me with that look of concern only a mom can give, and she said, "You still have that?" And I told her it never went away, and it never has went away, but I learned to live with it and I learned to ignore it, but it is still the first thing I hear every morning before I even open my eyes, and it's the last thing I hear every night. It'll probably be the last thing I ever hear, but the last thing I ever hear, and it always seems to be its loudest and always seems to bug me the very most every time I'm trying to listen to that sound of silence. Thank you.